the Gridiron Show in association with Sports Travel Tours, and week 5 is on its way. We've got a cracking interview coming up later today with one of my absolute favourite players to emerge in the league in the last 2 years. And not only that, but Ollie's actually managed to make it here. Hooray! Woo-hoo! All the news, all the views, and all the weekend previews. This is the Gridiron Show. Will Gavin and Ollie Hunter in the studio. This is the Gridiron Show in association with Sports Travel Tours. Sports travel by sports fans for sports fans. Ollie Hunter!
Hey!
So, come on. Me and Paolo, we had a good laugh the other morning. I think we had some fun. But there were two things that were missing. First of all, you entirely.
Yeah.
But also your opportunity to gloat on the Packers win over the 49ers. So I open the floor to you now, Ollie Hunter. A, why weren't you there? And B, is there anything you'd like to say?
I was not there because I slept through many alarms. people that don't know, I work at TalkSport and I'm basically working the nights and also the days. So I was burning the candle at both ends, and it was bad. And when it comes to the 49ers, I'm not going to gloat. You're a terrible football team. Green Bay are a wonderful team. But I will say,
let's go Crackers with the Packers!
Because I think that you are actually a Green Bay fan now.
No.
Yeah, you love Aaron Rodgers, you love Randall Cobb, Eddie Lacy, you want to be him, Brian Bulaga, you adore. Just face the facts. That you are renouncing the 49ers for this year. And because of your love for me and for the rest of the Packers, you are now a Packers fan.
I'm only playing that because I really wanted to play him when you're going, oh, I work the nights and the days. But I couldn't find it in time.
Nah,
yeah, I was very much on the Packers bandwagon and I still love watching them play. But you've obviously not listened to this week's podcast.
No, I haven't.
That's
not.
What's clear, because you did not hear my epic 2-minute rant about what an asshole Clay Matthews is. So
why is he an asshole?
Go back and listen to it. And get out of my face.
Well, because of the whole, you're not Russell Wilson.
Just in general, I made it quite clear that he is the most overrated linebacker in the league.
Whoa!
He has no place speaking to anyone like that.
You're and also, a disgrace.
But no, it's more than that. And all right, we're having the conversation again. The bigger issue is going to someone like that and getting in their face. It's like when a Premier League team beats a League Two team in the cup on penalties and they celebrate like they've won the cup. What you should be doing is morosely applauding and realising that you've scraped through and got away with it. You don't, there's no point in gloating in Kaepernick's face. We're a terrible
team. Wasn't in his
team.
Face.
It's like kicking a small child when they're already down.
And that's why I'm not gloating over you now. It wasn't in his face.
So what you're saying, it was actually you're a better kind of human being than Clay Matthews.
Yes, well, everyone knows that. Yeah, I want to say, who else is not as good a human being as Clay Matthews? Because there's quite a few that I could think of.
It's Greg Hardy, and we'll get onto that in a bit. did you have anyone in particular in mind?
Nope.
Good, okay.
Let's just say, no, I'm not going to say. carry on, guys.
No, tell me, I can cut it out.
James Dixon.
Yeah, he is a terrible. Not cutting that out. we've got plenty of games to get through this week ahead of week 5 of the NFL season. Bye weeks are Carolina, Miami, of course, and New York and Minnesota. Means we won't be talking about those teams. Sorry, guys. But we've still got plenty of other football to get to. And our fantastic exclusive interview with tight end of the Kansas City Chiefs, the yards after catch monster, Travis Kelce.
Oh,
so we'll be speaking to him.
It was James O'Shaughnessy. Oh, man.
Is Fells there as well? Is
I think so.
Good. Right, but before
all right,
that,
Kelsey's good. Okay, I'll give you that one.
Let's talk about Thursday night football. Colts at the Texans later this evening. It looks like the Colts will be without Andrew Luck as we speak right now. He threw in practice and he's planning to throw before the game, but they will be starting with the hot hand in the form of Matt Hasselbeck, if you can ever call him that. He had a good game at the weekend, 30 for 47, 282 yards in the and a touchdown in the 16-13 overtime win over Jacksonville. But he is 40 years old and playing two games on a short week. Because of that, I kind of fancy the Texans tonight.
Yeah, I fancy the Texans. I think I've changed my pick on Gridiron-Magazine to the Texans. And I think I did that before I knew that Hasselbeck was in. I love the fact also that I completely forgot there was football.
What, you forgot there's football at all tonight?
Yeah, just now.
That's what happens when the AFC South teams play each other. It's you get to that point where you don't care anymore. A little bit of love to the leaderboard overall. Somebody whose username is just Cowboys is winning the Gridiron Predictor Game leaderboard overall with 44. A lot of people in on 43. Jazzy Jirl. They've got some weird names. Morn 01. I am well off the pace. I'm about six games off the pace at the moment due to mainly my terrible week two showing. But more disappointingly than anything, I'm a game behind Matthew Sherry. So need to pull the socks up this week and have a good week.
Where am I?
I don't know. I haven't bothered looking for you, to be honest. So we did have a couple of tweets in about this game. Is Bill O'Brien using the under nine coaching rule of giving everyone a game when it comes to his quarterback? I fully support him putting Ryan Mallett back in after the weekend.
Why?
I believe that Brian Hoyer, similar to my feelings about the Manziel situation, I believe that Brian Hoyer is just meh. Whereas actually Ryan Mallett, what he did in the SEC, he's an interesting player. He's got a good arm. He had a bad game at the weekend, and I understand why they pulled him, but pulling him entirely would just be nonsense. Mm. And then Tom asked, is it time for the Texans just to try JJ Watt a quarterback? What else can they do to keep the fan base interested? I mean, actually, that's the right decision. JJ Watt a quarterback.
Do you know what?
Can he play all three phases? Can he receive punts and kicks, kick punts and kicks, play quarterback, and play defensive end?
And wide receiver, so he can catch the ball that he's just thrown. No, but I saw Hard Knocks, and I finished it. I know this is a bit old hat for everyone, but
you're about 2 months late.
No. But everyone remember back to one of the episodes where he's throwing a ball up into the second or third tier to the man of the Texans stadium. That's incredible. So he could do it.
Yeah, let's go to my Thursday night review then. I'll record this early tomorrow morning just before we release the podcast, and here are my thoughts. Morning! Sorry, feeling a little worse for wear, a bit of a long night, but enlightened by another great Thursday night football game. I looked through the last few weeks, obviously we had Patriots Steelers week one, Broncos Chiefs week two, the Giants Washington week three was probably the low point, but Ravens Steelers was great last week, and then tonight, Colt Texans. We'll get onto that in just a moment. There was a big bit of news that broke after we finished doing the podcast last night, and that's that Washington are giving consideration to playing one of their 2016 games in London. A person of knowledge of the situation told beat reporters this: negotiations between the NFL, the Washington team, and other teams under consideration remain ongoing, and at this point it's not been finalized. However, it is believed that Washington will likely end up making the list of London-bound teams. Now, there's not a huge amount to say other than that at the moment. I think it'll be interesting to see them come over. Obviously, a divisional game would be phenomenal. The Eagles, the Cowboys, the Giants all have good fan bases here, but their road teams that are playing in their out-of-division road teams that are meant to be playing there this year include, well, the Browns, the Vikings, the Steelers, and most importantly, the Green Bay Packers. The team that, when we did our poll last week of teams that had never played in the UK, wanted to see, the Packers came out miles on top of that. And the fact is that both Washington and Green Bay haven't played in the modern international series. I know Washington played back at Wembley in like the 90s, but in the modern international series, neither of these teams have played here. So the Pack facing Washington in Wembley next year would be phenomenal. It's pure speculation at this point, but we just want to put it out there. Let us know what you think at Gridiron on Twitter. Now on to this Thursday night football game. A fun game with three men on an offense who averaged 35 years old winning the game for the Colts. Andre Johnson, after I dropped him in every fantasy league, had two touchdown catches against his former team as the Colts beat the Texans 27-20 last night. Johnson, who spent his first 12 seasons, of course, playing for the Texans before his release back in March, pushed the lead to 27-17 with a two-yard touchdown reception from old man Hasselbeck in the fourth quarter. He finished with six catches for 77 yards on himself, and the Colts at 3-2 extend their AFC South winning streak to an NFL record 16 games. Brian Hoyer, who replaced Ryan Mallett for the 1-4 Texans in the second quarter, threw up a pass for grabs that was intercepted by Mike Adams with less than 2 minutes left and killed the game off just as it looked as they might drive down and tie the game up. We mentioned the 40-year-old Hasselbeck filling in for Andrew Luck, who missed his second straight game with a shoulder injury. He may not have been 100% either, apparently, after missing Tuesday's practice with illness, but he managed a near-perfect game last night. Andre Johnson, at 34, couldn't have dreamt a better scenario than his return to the Texans. After looking just old and slow and unable to catch balls the last few weeks, coming up with that pair of touchdowns, 77 yards, which more than doubled his season total to date. Frank Gore, now 32, of course, had 98 yards and a score of his own, unlucky not to break 100 yards. He did drop a couple of passes and struggled a little bit in protection. He has run hard, and actually, if we hadn't seen the couple of goal line fumbles he'd had, he'd have had a more impressive season than anyone else had realised up until this point. For the Colts, this win was absolutely key. They moved to 3-2. They've still got to play the rest of their AFC South brethren, but their next five games is seriously tough. They play four of the remaining undefeated teams in the next five games, starting off with the Patriots at home next weekend, what was meant to be the Brady revenge game. Obviously, it didn't work out that way. And then the Saints at home before going to the Panthers, home to the Broncos, then at the Falcons. It's a really tough slate of five games, particularly if we see some more encouraging signs out of the Saints this weekend. So they had to come up big in this one and win it. Really great for the Colts. For the Texans, oh my God, so many toys thrown out of so many prams last night. Bill O'Brien screaming at his players on the sideline. We'll get on to more of that in a moment. Hoyer and Mallett basically not talking to each other for the whole game. And Arian Foster throwing Gatorade all over the shop. From Mallett's perspective, it looked like he got hurt on a QB hit. Hoyer came in and provided the spark the Texans needed. Over the past 2 weeks, Mallett's 12 possessions have resulted in 6 punts, 2 interceptions, 2 fumbles, and a missed field goal, plus a failed fourth down and absolutely 0 points. Hoyer's 10 possessions in that time have resulted in 5 touchdowns, 2 field goals, a punt, an interception, a fumble, and 41 points. The garbage time kind of factor aside, obviously, as it was last week, the contrast is pretty startling. But he did throw up the big interception at the end just as he came under pressure from the Colts. Their pass rush wasn't brilliant on the night, but on this occasion, he held onto the ball too long, didn't have anyone open, and rather than throw it out on the third and reasonably long and go for that fourth down opportunity, but instead he threw it up, hoped his receiver would make a play, and Mike Adams came down with the ball. Now, it made sense that he did do that, because on the night, DeAndre Hopkins, who had another brilliant game, gave Pro Bowl cornerback Vontae Davis the absolute fit, and it was brilliant. He had the double move on Vontae Davis that would have gone for a long touchdown if he hadn't been overthrown by Hoyer. He was just phenomenal on the night. He's on pace for 134 receptions, over 1,800 yards, and 10 touchdowns. That's just, yeah, unbelievable. 237 targets he'd be on for this season. And Jalen Strong, 2 touchdowns on his first 2 NFL targets, including a 42-yard Jail Mary, as we're now calling it. He, of course, had caught that Hail Mary in the game with USC last year. But the 42-yard gift, courtesy of a pathetic Colts defense on the Hail Mary, Jalen Strong went up and got it and made it look like it was going to be a real game before halftime. So maybe that's why Hoyer felt like he had the chance to do that, but he threw it up in the air and instead it was intercepted. One quick mention of Arian Foster. Not a great day on the ground, but a big impact as a receiver. 9 catches, 77 yards. Still kind of getting into peak football shape. I mentioned about him throwing Gatorade everywhere. He did take a knock to the head, had to go for concussion protocol, was cleared of not having a concussion and return to the game, but he was clearly unhappy. He put himself back in the game for a single play after he initially got the concussion. Then, when he had to be sent down to the locker room, he did throw stuff everywhere. From Bill O'Brien's perspective, you've got to feel a little bad for the guy. Yes, he's had the quarterback mess, but a real lack of discipline cost them. He was clearly flustered throughout the game, watching them commit 13 costly penalties for 125 yards, and ended the game screaming at DeAndre Hopkins for a silly penalty that would have put them pretty much in field goal range, although they needed the 7 points, so they needed to go all the way down and score. But all in all, a frustrating night for the Texans, a big, big win for the Colts. Now let's get back. We've still got to speak with Travis Kelce and preview all the rest of the week 5 games. So back to the studio. So, Colts, Texans, another terrible AFC South game in the books. Let's move on. There's plenty to talk about. We've got all of this weekend's games. We've still got our Travis Kelce interview to come up and some of your interactions on Twitter as well. There has been some NFL news over the last couple of days. Most of the news we're going to try and weave into the games, but there were a couple of bits of news coming out of the owners' meetings in New York, starting off with, of course, the fact that the NFL have extended the international series through until 2025. Now, this doesn't just mean the game through to 2025 in London. We already knew that there was a 10-year deal in place with Tottenham Hotspur and those bespoke facilities going in place. But what we also know now is that they are now have permission to schedule games outside of the United Kingdom starting from 2016. One very likely location, and it looks like they're in place to get this done for next year, is the Estadio Azteca in Mexico City. And we know that Germany has also been talked about, which is a real move away from what they've done previously, which when we've spoken to Kirkwood in the past and when we've spoken to Mark Waller in the past, they've been very much, because of the nature of wanting to explore putting a franchise here, keeping the European focus to one city. Mm. Now, they're looking at Germany as well. Is there some suggestions here that maybe they're moving away from the potential of a London franchise?
I think there is. I think there is. Everyone that we talk to, and you often see writers associated with the NFL that write about these international series, we've all got a team already. And how much will we be on board a team coming over here and being London's team? It would be difficult. You and I probably would be, because we're football fans and we'd love it. But I mean, not to say that everybody else that's not listening would be football fans as well.
But do you know what? That's something that it's worth saying right now. I have a beef with NFL fans at the moment. Not in general, but the Sunday game, NFL UK fans were quite sniffy about the overall quality of play. And admittedly, it wasn't the best game of football we've seen at Wembley. But I just think, I went back and I was doing some research on the International Series stuff, and I was chatting to some guys on Facebook on the NFL UK fans group. And I went back and I listened to all of our interviews with Alistair Kirkwood over the years. So going way back to speaking to him at the fan rally, mm-hmm. before the game in 2012, at the Minnesota Vikings event before the 2013 games, and all the way through. We've had him on four or five times in a 3-year span. And what astounds me is I remember how excited we were at the beginning of 2013 just to have two games being played at Wembley. Admittedly, one of those games proved to be brilliant, the other one proved to be the Jags. But all in all, like, let's get some perspective. The amount of football we're getting here and the amount of competitive football we're getting here is phenomenal. And I think sometimes there is a bit of a lack of perspective from some fans. Not saying all fans, but the occasional naysayers. Regardless of whether or not we end up with a franchise or four games or eight games or whatever else, let's just remember that it's brilliant that we're getting live competitive football anyway.
That's true, but when fans are paying quite a bit for their season tickets, for their guaranteed seats, you do expect a little bit more. However, this isn't our league. This is an American football league. I mean, the Premier League doesn't go elsewhere. You know, the Scottish Championship doesn't go elsewhere. La Liga. You know, this is pretty much
interesting. There was an American fan saying, "Why aren't, well, you bring a competitive Premier League game over here if we're going to bring American football there?" The difference is with that, of course, that soccer, or football in our parlance, is already a worldwide sport. It's already a sport enjoyed in many, many countries. Whereas American football is quite insular to that country. Admittedly, Canadians have Canadian football. Mexico, there's a good supporter base. And here, there's a good supporter base. Here, Germany, and a few other countries. But generally, it is an American sport, and they're trying to grow that game internationally. The EPL know that they will sell jerseys and TV rights and shirts and everything else without the necessity to bring competitive games out and, to be honest, piss off the fan base. So that's why I think that won't happen.
But we're so lucky. We're so lucky to have competitive football here. Okay, sometimes it's not great, and I subscribe to you, Will. You know, we're that lucky to have it. Just relish it, treasure it, and enjoy it.
Relish it. Lovely. Just on this very point, actually, a video, Nat Coombs, friend of the show, you'll have seen him on the BBC coverage last weekend. I went and did Americanage this week. You can go back and listen to that as well. And if you didn't get enough Paolo Bandini, he was on both our show and Americanage this week. And he didn't even say the same things more than once or twice, which can be difficult when you're talking about the same subject.
I love Paolo.
It was impressive. But they've put out a Copper 90, who are a group he works with, put out a fantastic video that they put together during the international series week about what British football can learn from American football. They spoke to authors, they spoke to Alistair Kirkwood. It's all hosted by Nat. It's a really good video. It's only about 10 minutes long. You can watch it online. So go to at Nat Coombs on Twitter or at Copper90 on Twitter. Find the video, search Copper90 on YouTube. It's actually really worth a watch. I really enjoyed it. Even with it retreading a lot of things that I've known in the past, it was very entertaining and it made some good points.
A couple of things. I met the cameraman for that the other day.
Good.
He's
good.
A friend of a friend. I had a beer with him. Lovely fella. That doesn't mean anyone for anything. And then the other thing, don't be put off by Nat Coombs' tweet or Copper90's tweet where it's got the picture of John Terry and Tom Brady.
I mean, they are comparably terrible human beings.
No, no one's as bad as John Terry.
That's the person who you meant earlier when you said someone was worse.
Okay, two people, James Dixon and John Terry.
I genuinely was going to cut it out, but now I might as well leave it in. Right, let's move on. There's two more bits of news we want to just quickly cover. First of all, and this is just something to keep an eye out on, something that's been discussed at the New York meeting this weekend, is the fact that there are two solutions to Los Angeles at the current time. There's this Raiders Chargers outdoor stadium that's been suggested, and then there's the Rams who want to build an indoor stadium with a full-on complex and make to create this whole entertainment area. Both are being explored by the NFL at the moment, and there's likely to be a vote apparently as early as January, which really suggests to me we could see a team in LA, if not for next season, the season after, because obviously they've got to build the structure. But there's been talk of the team relocating there temporarily and into the Rose Bowl or into another stadium and then moving to their own stadium. So that's just one to keep an eye out on. If you've not read about that, Goodell did a press conference on it. It's well worth a look.
Very quickly, Raiders fans, Rams fans, Chargers fans, tweet us at Gridiron. How would you feel if your team moved? Okay, I mean, you're based over here in the UK mainly, most of you guys are.
None of you are going to have to travel much further than your current location if you're going to LA instead of St. Louis is the furthest one. But San Diego, Oakland, it's about the same distance. So if you want to go see a home game, you're going to the same sort of place anyway.
But does it matter to you where the team is based? If you're a Rams fan, you know, St. Louis, Oakland, San Diego, does it matter? Please get in touch. We'd love to find out how you guys feel about potentially your team moving cities.
Great question, sir. And finally, this is news that's just hit as we've gone to record. So sorry if there's been more clarification on this since we've hit the old record button, but it looks like the Dolphins have fired defensive coordinator Kevin Coyle. It was a surprise that he didn't go earlier in the week when they got rid of Joe Philbin. We thought that they would be paired together. Actually, yesterday, Dan Campbell came out and said that Kevin Coyle wasn't being fired yet. And then Thursday, 4 days into his tenure, they decide, and 10 days until they play again, they did decide to get rid of him. Look, they've been really disappointing. Since he joined the team in 2012, after spending a decade in Cincinnati, actually, I liked Coyle's defense up until last year. They brought in Ndamukong Suh, and they've just done nothing. We've spoken about it so much, so it's not a surprise that he's going, and we'll keep tabs on who they bring in his place.
Yeah, okay.
Beautiful. Before we get to Travis Kelce and to our weekend previews, there were a couple more questions on Twitter that I thought might be a bit of fun for us to answer. How do you feel?
Yeah, let's do it.
Now, there's a lot of people who are talking about quarter-way polls. We did something a few weeks ago. It was after the Week 3 games, where we did an 0-3 podcast. And we came up with that idea off our own back, but then about three other podcasts brought out the exact same feature of... what is it? And not off the back of us, I'm not suggesting anyone. Everyone just came up with the same idea. Let's talk about these 0-3 teams, who's really in trouble and who's not. So we're not doing a quarter poll awards thing, but we did have a question on it, which from Nick Boyd on Twitter, always asks good questions, said, which team are you most impressed with and which you most disappointed with quarter way into the season?
I think most disappointed is the Dolphins.
That's a good shout. I know
they're 1-3, but... their defense, and we just spoke about it, their defense has been absolutely awful. Rushing, running, Lamar Miller, none of the other guys have got involved or got any yards whatsoever. Ryan Tannehill hasn't looked the player that he has been, or we all thought he would be. And we haven't seen enough of Devontae Parker and Jarvis Landry, Rishard Matthews. I just think across the board, the Dolphins have been really, really disappointing.
That's a really good shout. I think what I find key about this question is that Apparently, Dolphins are appointed defensive back coach Lou Anarumo as their new defensive coordinator. So I told you something would happen while we were doing the podcast live.
Easy for you to say.
what was it? Who were you most impressed with, first of all?
I think the Bengals.
That was exactly my answer. I think what's key about this is not necessarily stating the question. It's only Twitter, 140 characters. We don't blame you, Nicky. But is that for me, it's about teams that have underperformed and overperformed, because we knew Green Bay were going to be brilliant. We knew the Patriots with Tom Brady back were going to be brilliant, and we'll get onto those teams in a short while. But the Bengals is a fantastic shout. I didn't expect them to be 4-0, and I think they'll be 5-0 after this week as well. Dolphins is a great shout at this point. Cardinals have been a real positive for me, although obviously their loss to the Rams last week does affect them in some way. The Colts have been my other real disappointment. Yeah. I know that we knew they had the holes that they hadn't addressed, but previous years they've been able to cover that up. This year they really haven't.
Yeah, they've been shocking. And actually, we all thought it would be okay. Well, not we all thought, but there was always the worries there. And it's just proven that their defence is shocking and it can't keep them in games. And Andrew Luck isn't performing the way that we wanted to perform. A quick sneaky one of disappointment. The Baltimore Ravens. Okay, they won.
Oh, very good
last
show.
Week, but that was lucky.
I've got a feeling Nick might be a Ravens fan. I might just be saying that at a turn, though. Sorry, Nick, if I am. Devon Foxall's got in touch on Twitter as well, and on a similar kind of vein to the most impressed, he asks which teams can make a legitimate argument that they are the second best squad in their conference. Now, I think what he's suggesting there is that the Patriots and the Green Bay Packers are so clearly the number ones in each of their division. Who do you see as being the number two overall seed?
Yeah, that's tough. I mean, I think probably going back to the Cardinals with their defense and the emergence, the resurrection of Chris Johnson pretty much has made their rush dynamic. They've always got John Brown, Michael Floyd, and Larry Fitz as well. He's been unbelievable
Larry
this year.
Larry Fitzgerald of like 2011. He's been brilliant.
So I really like the Cardinals in the NFC. AFC, I mean, when Big Ben went out, I would have, before that, you would have obviously said the Pittsburgh Steelers, but then defense-wise, they're pretty shocking as well. AFC is a tough one. There's something to be said about the Jets.
There's not something to be said about
them. There is. Their defense is great. Their offense. You've got Chris Ivory. You've got Brandon Marshall. Ryan Fitzpatrick. Okay, he's never going to be a great quarterback, but he's doing what he needs to do, and they've got three wins.
The Cardinals is a great shout in terms of balance. The Falcons, I think, is also a great shout in terms of balance, because they've managed to get their run game going again. We'll get back onto that in a minute. And the AFC, purely on the basis that they've still got great receivers, they've still got a great quarterback under center, even though he's physically not got the tools anymore, and they've just got the best defense in the whole league. It's got to be the Broncos.
Oh yeah, the Broncos. Yeah, but running. Okay.
I love the Bengals as a shout. I think the Bengals is a good one as well.
Running, Ronnie Hillman. He did have that massive run last week, but.
Well, Kubiak's come out and said it's now a proper two-headed beast in the backfield, and I think it needs to be, because they need to be doing something more with the running game. That's the one thing that suggests a lack of balance. But, right, let's go on and talk about some other the games this weekend, and we'll kick that off by talking with tight end of the Kansas City Chiefs. Really nice guy. Really enjoyed this interview. We'll tell you a bit more about it afterwards. This is Travis Kelce. Really pleased to have joining us on the phone a man... As a member of the London-bound Kansas City Chiefs, we look forward to seeing a little later this year. Third-round pick out of Cincinnati, Travis Kelce. How are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing absolutely wonderful. And it's a little humid day out here in Kansas City, but we're getting ready to go to work here and get our practice in the afternoon.
How are the preparations going ahead of this weekend's game?
Oh, they're pretty solid. There's a little more juice, a little more concentration this week. We got a lot of guys... That care in the locker room. So, you know, it's with the start that we've had, we got to go ahead and amp it up a little bit here this weekend. So we're going to go ahead this week and start in practice and let it transfer over into the game.
No doubt. And I want to ask about that. But starting off with last weekend's game, going into Cincinnati, playing in front of your friends and family, did that make this weekend's loss particularly tough?
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, it's tough, period, just because you put in so much hard work with the guys in the locker room and the coaches and everybody. You know, you put in so much work and preparation during the week, and then during the game, you know, you play your tail off, but it comes down to the little things, and it's what we're practicing this week, is just staying focused on the fundamentals and details of the game.
And then, well, you mentioned that yourself, and I hate to focus on the negative, but obviously you had quite a crucial fumble in the game when it was still reasonably tight. I know you had a similar one last year against the Cardinals. How are you personally working on bouncing back from that disappointment?
Well, I mean, each week you're going to have a challenge. So it's this week is going to present a little bit different of a challenge for us. I mean, the Bears have a good team. They play very physical. So, definitely up front, we're going to have to hold it down and kind of be the aggressor in that aspect of the game. And on top of that, you know, just go out there and play our style of football, which we haven't been able to get to just because we for whatever reason. But we just need to go out there and play our style of football.
There seems to be this week a real air of defiance coming out of the locker room. How would you sum up how the guys are feeling going into the Bears game?
Very motivated. To say the least. You got, like I said, you got a lot of guys that care about this team and where it's going. And I mean, it's we're kind of in a tough spot right now. So it's extra focus. It's just a lot more mental preparation than we've been doing. And I think it'll carry over into Sunday.
End of last season, you were in quite a strong position to make the playoffs, and then you had a really tough run losing four of those last six. Obviously, starting out this year, winning the opening game, but losing the next three, admittedly against teams who are all still undefeated. Is there a kind of feeling that, okay, we need to kind of almost push the reset button now and start this season afresh?
In a sense. I mean, you kind of break up the season in quarters, and the first quarter is out the way, and we can only take care of this next game ahead of us. And that's what we're focused on. I mean, you can't really look back or look forward. You got to deal with what's in the present. And, what we're doing right now is just focusing in on the Bears.
No doubt. In terms of the offensive side of the ball, obviously, last weekend, all the points came from Kairos Santos, a guy who we got to speak with when he came over this summer. A lot of people potentially talking about the lack of variety on offense. I know you personally are getting a lot of yards after the catch, but the ball's coming to you in shorter situations. And is there something, are the team working on taking more shots down the field and trying maybe being a bit more aggressive?
Those plays are always in the offense. I mean, you can never count those out with Andy Reid's offense. It's just one of those things of whether or not those plays get called and the defense is presented to where we can hit those routes during those plays. It's all trust in the play caller and Alex Smith. And, you know, wherever the ball goes, whether it's a deep ball or a ball on the line of scrimmage, you know, we got to get the ball north and get the ball in the end zone. That's our job as skill players and as receivers. And that's all we can really concentrate on. We can't think about the thought process of why aren't we throwing it deep? Why are we doing this? Why are we doing that? We just got to go out there and execute what's called.
Obviously, you were the Chiefs' leading receiver last year, and we know that there was the big off-season signing of Jeremy Maclin, who seems to have come on leaps and bounds, certainly through the last six quarters of football. What's his impact on the offense been and his role going forwards as you see it?
I mean, Jeremy's an awesome player. I mean, he's one heck of a guy to play with. He's smart, he understands the game, and he plays his tail off. And, I mean, when you got a lot of guys on a team that have those qualities, you know, you're gonna be very successful. And Jeremy has had success early on this year, and he'll continue to just because of how hard he works during the week and during the week of practice and things like that. So he's been an awesome add, and I can't wait to see what he can do next.
And what about your own role? I mean, I mentioned it already, but you lead the NFL in yards after the catch at tight end. I know that was a big feature of yours last year. Certainly, that's why you jumped onto a lot of people's radar. How do you see your own role in the offense?
To continue being steady. I mean, you just mentioned my stats were similar last year where I led the league in that category, and I'm leading them right now. So, I mean, just keep being accountable and being there for the team, no matter whether it's receiving, blocking, running routes or whatever it may be, you know, just going out there and just being the best player I can for them.
Is it something you're personally looking for when you turn your head, when you see the ball coming your way? Are you always looking for the open field for those gaps, or you know, are you very aware of where the down marker is and just making sure that you advance the play?
Yeah, I mean, I've been able to kind of have a knack for those things, just be able to feel the defensive coverage and know where the lanes are, know where the open spots are, knowing where the weak spots are of a defense. And it helps out in terms of running routes, but it also helps out in terms of yards after catch if you can really get good at it.
Fantastic. Now, just before we sign off here, I do need to ask you about London, but obviously you're playing the Bears at home this weekend, and we know about that stadium, we know about the intensity of that atmosphere. I've only ever been out to get one game at Arrowhead, but it's one of the best atmospheres I've ever been in. You're giving up a home game for London this year. Just tell us what that is as a loss to the team, and how, yeah, what it's like as a young guy playing in that phenomenal atmosphere at Arrowhead.
Well, I will say this: Arrowhead is, there's nothing like it. There will never be anything like it. I mean, it's a one-time deal. It took many, many years to get Arrowhead to where it is now, and the fans know that. The history of the organization knows that. So it's going to be tough to try and match that out anywhere. So that's obviously the disadvantage. But the hopeful advantage in my mind is that, you know, I've seen a couple of soccer games or football, if you want to. Put it in your. I've seen the fans out there get a little crazy, get a little hectic as well. So it's kind of my challenge to the Arrowhead and the Chiefs fans, or the Chiefs Kingdom out there in London and Europe, that you get as close to Arrowhead feeling as you possibly can.
Hey, we hope we can get the chop going as well. And have you spoken to anyone about the Wembley games? Have you seen any of the coverage on TV? Heard anything about what it'd be like to play out here?
No, I have not. I'm kind of letting it just go ahead and be an experience that I would get to experience, you know, on my own. So I'll go ahead and have my own thoughts about it.
And I know that you guys, the constant talk from the NFL is always looking to the next game, always thinking about that. But over the next few weeks, you've got the Bears, the Vikings, the Steelers, all guys who've had less than top starts to the season. There's some feeling that maybe that you've come off that difficult run of games and that now is your time to shine. Is this going to be a very different Chiefs team we see coming into London in 4 weeks' time to what we're seeing now?
I believe without a doubt, but I'll go ahead and let the play determine that. Instead of going out and making that my word. So.
And that's the final thing then, the Bears game this weekend. From what you've done in terms of studying tape this week, from what you've seen from them on the film and how they've played so far this year, do you see things in that defense that makes you think that you personally and the team can bounce back this weekend and have a big game?
Without a doubt. I mean, I don't think there's a team in the NFL that can stop us when we play our game of football. And that's honestly God's truth. I mean, we just have to go out there. It started on Monday, coming in this offense or coming in this office and getting things right. And you know, it's a full week's work, and it's going to take all the way up until game time to really lock in and get this thing going.
Look, been a real pleasure chatting to you, Travis. Hope you for the best this weekend, and really look forward to hopefully catching up with you out in London.
All righty, thanks for the call.
The yards after catch beast, Travis Kelce there. Really enjoyed chatting with him. It was a slightly shorter interview. You only got kind of 7 or 8 minutes then. The reason for that is that we're going to be doing a big feature on him and the Chiefs coming up in Gridiron Magazine. Go ahead and subscribe online, gridiron-magazine.com, if you've not done already. And in fact, if you still subscribe before the end of this month, you've still got a chance to be entered into the competition with our partner, Sports Travel Tours, to win a chance to go to the AFC or NFC Championship game. So well worth doing anyway. But there was some stuff in there. We asked him about Justin Houston. We asked him about playing at Arrowhead. Some other bits and pieces that we'll bring you more of at a later date. We just wanted to have a chat to him about last weekend, this weekend. It was a really tough loss for him in particular last weekend, going into Cincinnati, his alma mater at university, and losing in such spectacular fashion. I just think to myself, I look at this week, I look at the fact that the teams they've had to play since that tough week two loss against the Broncos have been the Packers and then the Bengals, who, you know, we think are two of the best teams in the, they've not played an undefeated team since week one. This week will be the week that everything gets back on track because they're playing the Bears.
Fantastic. What's worried me most about Kansas, and I don't think they're going to have this problem against the Bears, has been that offensive line. 5 sacks last week. Travis Kelce, obviously part of this offensive line, they all need to buck their ideas up, get blocking and giving time for Alex Smith, and also making the holes for Jamaal Charles. He not too great against the Bengals last week, not brilliant against the Packers the week before. I think against the Bears we'll see more explosiveness from Charles, and I think Alex Smith will be able to find his receivers more.
Kelce seemed super determined when we spoke to him. He lost that really big fumble in the Bengals game, at which point I think the game was 15-21 because they scored. Jeremy Hill got the touchdown and they went for a two-point conversion to make it 29-15. That kind of killed the game off. So he had, personally, a big setback in that game. Macklin, though, took the top off early on. He's looked, through the last six quarters of football, or five of the last six quarters of football, he's looked like the guy they've gone out to try and get a number one. If they can get the ball, just be a bit more aggressive, Andy. Just push the ball down the field. Let Alex Smith try some things that are more interesting than just check downs. I love that Travis Kelce has such great runs after the yards after the catch. He's more like a running back out of the backfield sometimes, and they've got that in Jamal Charles as well. The Bears aren't great in that area. Their linebacking core's poor, so maybe that is where they get some big looks this weekend. But I just think, let's try and open it up against a pretty poor set of safeties and corners in the Bears, and let Macklin go and play. And I think the Chiefs win, and I think that they really get their season back on track with a big win this weekend.
Yeah, I think so, and I hope so. But Jay Cutler's back. Is Alshon Jeffrey going to make it? We're still unsure totally whether he's going to be back. So the Bears, they have this unknown sort of quality about them. Beating the Oakland Raiders last week was a bit of a shock for myself. I probably would have changed my pick had I known that Jimmy Clausen would have been out and Jay Cutler would have come in. But yeah, Chiefs for me.
Fantastic. Right, let's go through the highlights of the weekend's game. We're going through all the games, but there are certainly some games we want to look at in terms of weekend highlights. And let's start off with a game that we talked about in a little bit of depth with Paolo on Monday, because I think this is a very exciting game. Cincinnati cruise to an undefeated start to the season's quarter mark, whereas Seattle, by all accounts, are lucky to not be 1-3 at this point. The Bengals will try and reach 5-0 for the first time in 27 years. And Andy Dalton is playing lights out football. And just, I've said this on the last three or four podcasts, but here's some stats that I picked up today. Not only is he 115 or greater quarterback rating every game, if I told you three touchdowns, 379 yards, and over 70% completion, what would I be talking about?
Andy Dalton?
I'd be talking about Andy Dalton against the blitz. That's his performance against the blitz this year. I mean, admittedly, that includes one huge touchdown throw to AJ Green, but this Seahawks team are going to try and bring pressure against a very good offensive line, and I don't think it's going to be a high-scoring game, because that defense, we talked about Cam Chancellor's input, 20 offensive drives against the Seahawks since he's come back, 18 punts, one fumble, one field goal, still no interception. With Cam in the defense, they are a much, much better team in Seattle, but I think the Bengals, I just think that they get enough going on offense that their defense against that porous offensive line will do the job they need to do.
Yeah, I mean, the Bengals are fourth in total passing yards. The Seahawks are fourth in total passing yards conceded, fourth best. So something will, that's the key area. I think that's where it's going to be won, and whoever gets the upside in that area will win. And when you've got such a monster receiver in AJ Green, who's unbelievable at the moment. Marvin Jones, okay, had a quiet week last week. And Andy Dalton, who's been, honestly, but that stat about that pressure, the amount
under
of
the
yards
blitz,
under,
yeah.
Under the blitz, something under
he's
pressure.
He's not been good under pressure before this year. That is an area where he has struggled, and he's looked really good. Seattle, use Jimmy Graham properly.
Yeah, come on, man. And what's he done? Has Jimmy Graham slept with Ciara? Is that it? Is that what's happened, Russell?
It very well could be. Look, I have concerns over the Seahawks offense overall. We talked about it with Paolo on Monday, but the offensive line is porous. He's making some incredible plays with his legs, but he's also lost the most fumbles in the league of any player over the past three seasons. And, he's fumbled the most times, and then he lost two this last week. Generally, they've been able to collect them. They're really missing Max Unger in the middle. This week, they faced Geno Atkins, who has been brilliant through the first 4 weeks, much more like his kind of 2012-2013 form for the Bengals. I was looking up, Darrell Bevell said back in August, the cool part about Jimmy is we can plug him in. We really don't have to do anything special. Well, he's just 18 passes, sixth amongst tight ends, compared with the 32 grabs he had for the Saints through four games last year. And Doug Baldwin's getting more targets than Jimmy Graham right now. Darrell Bevell needs to use him properly, use him like a wideout. Stop trying to get him to block because of their terrible offensive line. Get the ball out a bit quicker, and they might have some success. Might.
Should Seattle fans And Seattle coaches, should they be worried that most of Russell Wilson's plays and yards that he get are on the scramble? And that obviously leads to that leads to fumbles, but it also leads to a whole lot more hits as well. And it all seems rather off the cuff as soon as he starts moving outside of the pocket.
But he is brilliant at that. Yeah. We've seen guys like that in the past who've been
brilliant.
But
can you go through a whole season doing that?
I think you can, because he has done in the past, but I think that the what was previously a weakness that he turned into a strength is maybe a little too weak now, and, and it may have gone beyond the point where his phenomenal ability, and it is phenomenal, just it's too much for him to handle. I think they go to 2-3, and the Bengals go 5-0.
Yeah, I've picked the Bengals as well.
Oh, Cincy. They're probably going to now fail miserably to do that. Another game that really stands out to me from the early kickoffs is the St. Louis Rams at the Green Bay Packers. I like this game more than I think some people do on paper.
Well, that's because St. Louis's defense is pretty good.
Pretty good.
This show has got a huge love for Robert Quinn. He's been outstanding.
Aaron Donald's been phenomenal.
Donald as well. And then when you've got a Green Bay offense, Eddie Lacy, the Green Bay offense in rushing terms is third in the league. I mean, who would have thought that 5 years ago? Even I mean, Green Bay are fantastic, and Aaron Rodgers is spreading it around, so it's far more difficult to cover. And the way he manipulates the game is just out of this world. So there's so many facets to this which make it fascinating.
I think there's one thing with Rodgers in all these records, and he's, you know, 995 yards, 11 touchdowns, no interceptions, nearly 73% completion. He's a ludicrous human being, right? But the Rams have been working on the hard count this week. Jeff Fisher has been using an air horn to simulate it, which supposedly pissed off some of the line, but I thought that was quite funny. They'll be a lot more pissed if Rodgers burns them on a free play when he draws them offside. But I think Greg Williams, this Rams offense has got all the pieces to run so many different schemes and so many different looks and so many different blitzes that actually I think Greg Williams might try and bring more pressure at Rodgers. And teams have been too scared to do that because he's so quick at getting the ball out when he needs to be. And I think that we might see a slightly different home performance this week. I'm not going to sit here and suggest he's going to break the streak or anything like that. But I think the Rams will cause Aaron Rodgers the most problems he's had in Green Bay for a long time. One thing that's really intrigued me, and this is, I've got to kind of hold my hands up and say I was totally wrong on this year, is that the Packers have got a run defense again.
Well, it's, and I'll tell you where it's come from. It's from that first half against the Chicago Bears where,
when Forte just torched.
Forte ran for 104 yards. And we kept him down to, I think, 31 or 41 yards in the second half. And ever since then, dropping Clay Matthews back on those first two, on those first two downs, and he's been spying the rusher.
I think that's a point. BJ Raji has
He's been fantastic.
Best he's played in absolute years as well. But I looked up the stats on this against the run. The Packers D this year in the last three games have held Marshawn Lynch to 41 yards for 15 carries, Jamaal Charles to 49 yards for 11 carries, Carlos Hyde for 8 yards for 20 carries, and now they come up against Todd Gurley, who in the second half against Arizona was ludicrously good. And BJ Raji himself even compared him to the likes of Hyde and Peterson and Marshawn Lynch, kind of the way he runs with attitude, the way they always look to finish runs, a bit more agile to make you miss. Like, they can do both facets of the game. So BJ Raji is comparing Todd Gurley to some great players, but this is going to be a huge test for him if the Rams decide that they're going to run the ball, which is probably the way they should go.
Yeah, it's a fantastic looking game. That, now that you've highlighted it with Todd Gurley and in the Packers rush defense, again, another part of the game where it's just so interesting, and it could go either way. It really could. I'm picking the Packers, but it's by a touchdown. That's all.
Here are a few of the games that I think we should rattle through in the 6 o'clock games. Absolutely inexplicably, the Sky game this weekend. And I only mean that because prior to the season, I understand that you would have seen this game and gone, ooh, New Orleans Saints against the Philadelphia Eagles, two teams with interesting offenses, two teams who have been a bit of a rebuilding. People will want to see what they look like. They're both 1-3. They've both looked really bad this year. The Saints will seek to build on their first win after an 0-3 start. They're worse since 2012. They got the overtime win against Dallas last weekend thanks to the 80-yarder to CJ Spiller, although obviously that was actually like an 8-yarder to CJ Spiller and 72 yards worth of running. And the Saints had only lost their previous couple of games by 12 points, so they were looking like a better team. But the Eagles have been dreadful.
They've been awful. Actually, we said about who's been the most disappointing.
Why didn't we say the Eagles?
It's got to be the Eagles, because, oh my goodness gracious, we all thought, everybody, I mean, I can't think of anyone that said, oh no, the Eagles won't be well, they are kind of interesting to watch because they're being so bad. But the Eagles will get it together. And
I've taken the Saints in this game.
I've gone the Eagles in this game.
A little bit of division in the.
I've worked out. I'm two games behind you, so this is where I could make it up.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, we're having our own little mini league because we're so far behind everyone else. Browns at Ravens. Despite the receiving core being decimated by injuries, the Ravens remain confident given their success on the ground. They've joined against Cleveland in recent years. Forsett helped run the Ravens to their first victory. They could rely heavily on him again on Sunday. It was a collective sigh of relief after that 23-20 overtime win over Pittsburgh. They've had a long week to recover from it. And in terms of the Browns side of the ball, I mean, the Cleveland Browns are kind of what we thought they were. They've now gone 1-3. I just see them as a 3-4 win team. Not particularly exciting. Can they get the run game? I don't know. They ran San Diego a lot closer than I thought they would, but I just can't. I'm going with the Ravens in this one.
I think I'm going with the Browns in this one.
Division! I like it!
Yeah, I think the Ravens, their receiving core is a little bit banged up. Michael Campanaro, Breshad Perryman, and Steve Smith Sr., who was week to week, he took that massive hit last week. And then, I'm not sure, I think the pass defense of the Ravens is pretty dodgy as well. Putting Travis Benjamin... I've got a sneaking suspicion that the Browns will do something in this, so I've gone Browns.
Interesting. Bills at Titans. Sammy Watkins returned to training today. That could be a real boom for the Bills. They brought in Dan Boom Heron this week after Carlos Williams went out with a concussion. It's believed that Carlos Williams still could make it back this weekend. they even tried out Trent Richardson at one point. That's how desperate they are in their backfield. So Sammy Watkins coming back could be a real boon for them. Dan Heron, of course, had those ridiculous couple of games last year for the Colts, but outside of that, hadn't really done a huge amount. I'm concerned about the defense in Buffalo because two games they've looked like the best defense in the league. The other two, they've been pretty poor. They've allowed 376 yards a game, which is, they only gave up 312 to rank fourth all of last year. Three Pro Bowl defensive linemen. This unit should be better than it is. And Marcus Mariota can get the ball out quickly. We've seen it. He's been impressive through 4 weeks. So, through 3 weeks at a bye. I'm still going to take the Bills, but I was tighter on this than I thought I was.
I think I've taken the Bills in this one. What's going to be really interesting, Tennessee-wise, not that Mariota, and we want to see a better performance from him, but the rushing. Bishop Sankey, Dexter McCluster, Antonio Andrews have all taken turns in leading Titans rushing each game. And Ken Whisenhunt has said, we don't know who it's going to be each week. We've got different things going for these guys, and it's a good thing that we've all had contributions, but they don't know who is going to be the lead rusher, and that's kind of worrying on the day.
Washington at the Falcons. Washington still very much in the NFC East at 2-2. The Atlanta Falcons joint leading the NFC South at 4-0. At the moment, Dan Quinn has been incredibly impressive on both sides of the ball. But most importantly, this is a game about two rushing attacks. Washington lead the league with 558 yards. Gruden spoke out positively about Matt Jones, who's had a bit of more of a backseat behind Alfred Morris the last 2 weeks, saying he likes both guys. They had a brilliant game-winning drive against the Eagles last weekend where the run game really came to life. They let Kirk Cousins have some much nicer reads, some shorter balls. He was given a lot more protection. But then on the other side, Devonta Freeman. Why is Kyle Shanahan so good with running backs? Washington and Cleveland, he turned some average running backs into great players. He's doing it again with Freeman. Their offensive line play, which hasn't had a huge amount of turnover, looks a lot better. A lot more old school running concepts, using a fullback a lot of the time. I think this is a really exciting game on the ground. The difference for me is that when they need to go to the air, the Falcons have Julio Jones, Matt Ryan, who's getting more protection thanks to those fullback looks, and I think the Falcons win this one.
I think so. I think, well, Washington do have the second best rush defense in the entire league, and that's where we might see a bit of a sticking point when it comes to Devonta Freeman. But we've seen that he's actually very good as a passing As a catching running back as well. And that's where I think it will be won. I agree with you, and Falcons are formidable. Formidable at home.
The 1-3 Jacksonville Jaguars stay in state and travel to the 1-3 Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Sorry, are we really talking about this game?
We don't need to talk about it too much. We can just talk about it very briefly. One small thing, I've actually used the Jags as a streaming defense in one fantasy game this week, even though they're on the road. Jameis Winston has a league-high 7 turnovers. Since, I think it's in week 2, he looks more impressive. But he said this week, I'm learning about myself. I'm still adjusting to the game in the NFL. I'm trying to get better at it every week. Just have to work at not turning the ball over. For the Jags, Julius Thomas might be back. He was catching practices, practices and passes today. He was catching passes in practice today, is of course what I mean, ladies and gentlemen. But I, it's the Jags at the Bucks. The Jags had some chance of a semblance of relevance when they should have beaten the Colts last week. They didn't do it, and I'm very disappointed.
Yeah.
I'm not angry.
Yeah, I know.
I'm just disappointed.
I know. Tampa Bay have lost 11 on the trot at home.
Make it 12.
Make it 12.
I'm taking the Jags.
Yeldon, Hearns, Robinson. It's going to be
Thomas.
Maybe Thomas is going to be a bloodbath, people. Bloodbath.
So let's get on to the late games then. We've still got Sunday Night Football, Monday Night Football. We've got a few more questions on Twitter as well. We may save those till next week. Because to be honest, there's just so much to talk about in terms of actual football. I want to save the Cardinals-Lions game and the Patriots-Cowboys game. So let's talk about the lesser of the evening games, let's say. Jack Del Rio goes up against his old defense as the Broncos face the Raiders. Their once prolific offense has been off to a shaky start so far, and the Raiders haven't looked that bad. But their defense is ridiculous. Just 275 yards allowed per game. Second with 17.3 points given up. TJ Ward was brilliant with that strip sack. Von Miller has been incredible. I spoke about it earlier, but DeMarcus Ware looks like a man possessed at the moment. He looks like the guy who's really benefiting from Phillips's offense. I just think the Raiders, even though I've liked them so far this year, and even though they've got some really nice offensive weapons in Cooper and in Murray and in Derek Carr, and they've got a nucleus of a decent-looking team there, I just think the Broncos are light speed ahead of anyone else in their division, and they win this one.
Yeah, I can't disagree with you. They've got defensive end Derek Wolfe back from a four-game suspension as well. It just seems that defense loves being on the field and loves making the hits, loves creating the turnovers. They love playing football, and that's really showing in their results as well. So yeah, I like the Raiders. I like Derek Carr. I like Kamari Cooper. I like Latavius Murray, but I can't see Murray. I think this could be the game where Murray slightly gets found out. I hope not. I hope I'm wrong, because I'd want the Raiders to win, but I'm picking the Broncos in this.
The Arizona Cardinals at 3-1 travel to the Detroit Lions, who are 0-4. Should be at 1-3, but they're at 0-4. If I gave you some numbers of offense over the past 3 weeks, and the number linked to the Cardinals is 39 and the number linked to the Detroit Lions is 38, you might look at those and think, oh, those offenses look pretty balanced.
Yeah.
That's the average number of points the Cardinals have scored in the last 3 weeks, and the total number of points the Detroit Lions have scored. The Cardinals have been on fire. It was a shame the way they fell to St. Louis last weekend, particularly with that run attack in the second half, gave them some pause, but I think that they can't go to Detroit and lose this one. They're going to move to 4-1.
I hope so. Are there any teams where it comes to us looking through the games and you think, oh God, do I have to talk about this team?
I feel a little bit like that about the Lions.
Yeah, that's exactly what why I brought it up. It's just that defeat against Seattle has made them totally irrelevant now.
Which is a shame, because I liked them a bit going into the season.
They were one of my wild cards. They were one of my wild cards at the beginning of the year.
I wasn't there. I was nowhere near that.
Yeah, I know, and I've fallen so out of love with the Lions, and I'm sorry, guys. Cardinals.
What I particularly like is the article I've got up on the Lions on here, because they've got a what to read next on the right hand side, has a thing about this lion made the ultimate sacrifice for her cubs.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to go and watch some nature videos. Forget this. Easily the pick of the late games this weekend is New England travelling to Dallas. New England coming off their bye week, Dallas at 2-2. I say easily because this is the most exciting, is it? No, it is easily the best of the late games. It's not. It's obviously not a great slate, clearly.
It's really not.
Some news for New England. Dion Lewis has really taken off in his first season with the Patriots, and Belichick has ensured that that will last for a few more years. They signed Lewis to a contract extension through to 2017, per a source who has seen the deal. The extension worth potentially $5 million through that time. And what's potentially most impressive about this New England offense is they have the fourth most points in the league.
And they've had a bye.
And they've had a bye week. They've had a game less than everyone else in the top 10, and they have the fourth most points in the league. Everything they do is so fast-paced. They're really great at getting the wide receiver matched up against, in mismatches, against linebackers, against smaller safeties, because Rob Gronkowski is so good when he moves around, that means that Incredleman gets much better looks. The Cowboys, for a defensive point of view...
Incredibleman.
Yeah, I said it.
Yeah. Do you want to say something to me?
No, not at all.
Okay.
Sean Lee returned to practice this week. He was forced out of the matchup with the Saints with a concussion. They'll be getting Greg Hardy and Rolondo McClain back this week from suspension. Greg Hardy, obviously the bigger part of that. He could have a huge game after basically having 18 months off. As far as McClain, good for the rotation, but against this brilliant New England offense, they'll be playing a lot of nickel, and he's not great coverage linebacker, so I really doubt he'll be doing a huge amount. But let's just talk about Greg Hardy quickly. Greg Hardy's had like 18 months out. He got banned from the league last year, or put on that nonsense, fake version of IR that they
Commissioner's
have.
Commissioner's exemption.
Yeah, that nonsense. So he still managed to get paid somehow, despite allegedly throwing a woman onto a bed of guns. So he came out this week, and not only, initially he talked some smack about going up against Brady, which is fine, said he loves playing against him, and he's one player that he'd love to just, you know, take his head off, whatever, fine. Then he came out afterwards and said, I love seeing Tom Brady, he's cool. And have you seen his wife? I hope she comes to the game. I hope her sister comes to the game, and all of her friends come to the game. It's one of my favourite games of the years, guys. You've just been suspended and just managed to barely scrape getting out of a jail sentence because of your behaviour towards a woman, you misogynistic bellend. It just made me very, very angry.
Yo tengo no fala aquí.
I don't know what that means. I don't even know what language it is. I'm assuming Portuguese.
It's Portuguese because Gisele Bündchen and her family are Portuguese, Brazilians and Portuguese speakers. What? That is a disgraceful. That's disgrace. I mean... Get out, Hardy.
Is there a worse player? Is there a worse person in the league? We've named a couple already, but he is definitely up there. Patriots win.
Yeah, easy. Patriots win. The only thing to watch out for is their rush defense isn't great. Joseph Randall is looking pretty great, so that'll be interesting. But I wouldn't know how much they're going to run the ball, given how far behind they could be on the scoreboard.
Okay, let's move on to the... Right, you talked about talking about teams, and are there any that you look at and you think, meh? Apparently Colin Kaepernick's not worried about his job security. Good one, Colin.
Yeah, but that's because Blaine Gabbert is behind him.
Yeah, you'll be more worried come week 17. The 49ers travel to the New York Giants, and just to give you some perspective on exactly how I've faced this game, in the six proper fantasy leagues I do, plus the four charity ones that we do, I don't mean to suggest our charity ones aren't proper, we take all of them very seriously, but I'm just saying, in the 10 leagues I'm in, I've gone out and picked up the Giants as a streaming defense in, I think, seven of them.
Okay.
Because I think the 49ers could even put up a bagel in New York on the late game on Sunday. This is one of those times where you look at the scheduling and you think to yourself, I'm sorry, NFL, why do you only allow them to flex games from like week 7 or 8 onwards? This game should have been flexed out ages ago. There were plenty of other games. I mean, imagine if we could have flexed the Seahawks-Bengals game into a late night game this weekend.
Yeah, but they do it because the East Coast audience is massive and for the Giants, and the West Coast audience is pretty big for the 49ers as well. That's why they've done it. What we've got, and I can see why you've done that, Will Gavin, picking up the Giants defense, is because they're best against the rush. They're not great against the pass.
That's right, because Colin Kaepernick, his arms don't actually work as anything, but they're actually mechanical cannons that have just been attached to throw balls exactly 40 yards past any receiver who might possibly catch them.
Well, yes, they're second worst for pass defense. However, the San Francisco 49ers are the worst when it comes to passing offense.
That's no surprise.
So expect the Giants to jump up jump up the passing defense list and the 49ers to stay where they are, because Colin Kaepernick is not Russell Wilson.
Just a quick mention about the Steelers-Chargers game Monday Night Football. I do like the look of this game, although Big Ben, it's been announced this week, is due back in 3 weeks' time, is a suspicion. Vic had a decent game, 24 for 32, 162 yards and a touchdown. I think actually those stats are across when he came in for the injured Big Ben, so it includes that quarter as well. Had a big block for the touchdown, but when it was put on his shoulders to win that game in overtime, he couldn't do it. Phillip Rivers has been ludicrous so far this year. Leads the league with 124.9 yards through the air. Steelers have conceded. They've done well against the pass, only 187 yards against the Rams. I think they were well below 200 against the Ravens as well. But Cameron Hayward's pass rush and the secondary playing well above the level that it is already. Phillip Rivers will expose that defense. They play a lot of off coverage. I think there'll be a lot of short yardage with yards after the catch for the Chargers. Rivers, just I hope he goes after them hard. And I love that Antonio Gates is back for Monday Night Football, considering how poor they've been in those short yardage situations. I'm taking the Chargers.
Yeah, Chargers for me. Nothing else said.
There were a few questions on Twitter. I mean, Cal asks if the Jets risk becoming a bit of a circus if they go straight back to Geno Smith. I think we can save that for next week because they're not playing this weekend. James, as a novice fan, why don't teams save a roster space by getting a kicker who can also punt? Is it really that hard for someone with legs?
No. I don't know why they don't do this.
Well, I disagree with you entirely. I think punting is a much underrated...
And you love punting now.
I am all in on great punters. I know I've always been... You know, we were part of the Get punters Ray guy in the in the Hall of Fame conversation. I think that it's a much underrated skill to get the kind of... special teams really does make a huge difference in games. People do forget that it's a three-phase game, and particularly when we've seen so many kicks missed this year already. I'm afraid, James, they do it because actually it is an important skill.
Why don't people kick for the corner more often, a la rugby? You know,
well, the whole idea is to try and get the ball downed within the 20-yard line, within the 10-yard line. They'll only go for touch if they know that that's the best chance of them doing that. But really, it's about trying to get it away from the man who's going to receive it and
try and create a turnover.
Yeah, and it's also getting the ball... Well, I don't know about the turnover, but it's about getting the ball high. It's about hang time, because if you get the ball high and you get the hang time on it and it lands at the 10, but... your guys who are in blocking have managed to make it all the way down to there, then they're forced to call a fair catch and they're starting deeper than their own 20. So
rather than going for a risky touch.
Yeah, time is a bigger stat in punting than distance, and I don't know why we're talking about that.
Me.
I'm so sorry, James. but otherwise, I think we're all done. That's all of the weekend games.
Yes.
Rattled through that.
Good work.
Woo! Is there anything you'd like to bring to the conversation, Ollie? Have you bought an alarm clock?
I've bought an alarm clock. We're all good. I don't know whether you would have cut all of these out. Maybe not, maybe so. But every time you've coughed, it's been right in my face. Why didn't you turn the other way?
I've been trying to cough away from the mic. I've not
just
been coughing
in your face. Just turn the other way. It's been...
Yeah, there is a wall there, admittedly.
Three or four times I've felt your coughingness right on my face.
I'm really sorry.
Yeah,
I've not been very well and you've had to be in this hot, sweaty little room.
I know!
I don't know why we didn't do this in a studio where there's some glass and you could be separated from me.
Oh, I'd much prefer that.
I'm really sorry. So, yeah, hopefully by next week I'll be over my man flu. I've got a weekend off this weekend.
Really?
I've got no game in the football because of the international series.
Yeah.
I've got nothing. I'm not working on Friday or Saturday night anyway. So basically, there's no sports for me to cover. There's no international series game, and the radio coverage should be starting in week 8. Shh, don't tell anyone. So, yeah, I've got a weekend off just to enjoy myself.
College football Saturday?
Oh, college football Saturday. NFL Sunday. Cannot wait. And then we're nearly back at another Wembley game. Just 2 weeks away.
I know.
Oh, it's so exciting. Thank you so much for listening. As always, keep checking us out, gridiron-magazine.com. Get on there and make your picks for the weekend's games. You'll definitely be better. You could probably start now and beat me and Ollie for the season over how bad we've been so far this year. Keep checking us out on Twitter at gridiron. We put lots of great content out there. And go and check out that Copper 90 video as well, featuring Nat Coombs. It was really good stuff. Sports travel tours, of course. We talked about watching games over here in the UK and that we should be more thankful. But if you want to go out and watch games in the US, sports travel tours do travel for sports fans, by sports fans, and it's really definitely worth checking them out. And we should hopefully, in the next couple of weeks, have some news for you about that trip next season, the Gridiron Tour of America. It's so exciting. Ollie Hunter, thank you very much for actually coming in this time.
Sorry for last time.
No worries at all. Anything final to add?
No. How about you?
I don't think I do. I want to go home to bed. So thank you very much for listening. This has been The Gridiron Show. Love you. Bye.
I'm getting a Subway.
I'm going home to my wife.
I've already been there.
Hey-o!
Oh! Sorry, Sarah.
Fill the trolley with your favourite brands on Rollback at Asda. A 38-pack of Fairy Non-Bio Capsules was £8.50, now £5.75. And Lenore Gold Fabric Conditioner was £4, now £2.50. Big brands, small prices. Don't compromise. Asda. Save money, live better. Selected stores subject to availability. Lenore 1.925 litres. Ends 18th of March.